The Fields Auto Group proudly presents Huddle Up with Bucky Brooks, J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, and NFL Network analyst and former Jaguar Bucky Brooks bring you the latest on your Jacksonville Jaguars.
Everything's got to be about the future. It's got to be about tomorrow and bringing all that into focus as we, you know, attack the season.
Huddle Up with Bucky Brooks starts right now.
Welcome into the Huddle Up Podcast. It's Wednesday, May 4th. J.P. Shadrick with NFL Network analyst Bucky Brooks and Jaguars.com senior writer John Osier. Subscribe to the official Jaguars Podcast Network and give us a listen on the podcast page at Jaguars.com or on iHeartRadio, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. Well, we're back on Wednesday this week. The draft is over. And John, I must say, it was great to have Bucky in Jacksonville this past weekend for our Jaguars.com coverage.
Was he in town? He did a nice show. No, I kid, Bucky. But I love the coverage. Because of Bucky, the depth of coverage and the level of expertise was off the charts. And that's the one nice thing I'll say about Bucky on the podcast.
Wow. Wow. You got that going for you, Buck.
I appreciate that. Like, look, I had a lot of fun, and I will say what was great was being able to get down and feel the energy. Like, one of the things that I missed on being on the media side was feeling the energy of being with the team and being connected. And so kind of feeling the buzz that was going around the building when the picks were coming in, like, that was terrific. And then kind of reconnecting not only with you guys, but reconnecting with the fan base and seeing guys, season ticket holders at the events and kind of getting excited about all of that stuff was really, really cool, and I can't wait to get back down there and do some more stuff.
There was a line at one point to get photographs with Bucky Brooks. A line.
Yeah,
It was a small line.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying the length of the line.
A line, technically, I believe in Webster's, can be two people.
I'm just saying there was a line. That's all I'm saying. That was great to see, though, and great to have you here, and outstanding to have you on our coverage. So let's recap the draft class. John, are you feeling better now? I forget the word you used after the first round pick.
Was irritated by the reaction.
Yes.
More than anything. I think Bucky can probably speak to this probably better than I can, the level of player that Trayvon Walker is. My overall gripe was that Trayvon Walker was perhaps a surprise pick, and he was perhaps if you had ranked the level of, quote, safeness out of the top four or five, he's probably the third or fourth safest pick. But there became this, I think because of the surprise of the pick, I'll put it this way, Bucky and JP. We went from a month ago in the Ozone, all I was getting was questions about, oh, Hutchinson didn't do anything against Georgia. How could they take Hutchinson? He was awful against Georgia, John. Well, then they turn around and they pass on Hutchinson for Trayvon Walker, and it was like they took a guy from, you know, Southwest Missouri State who was 200 pounds to play defensive end. This was not a willy-nilly reach from Trayvon Walker. If you go around the league, bare minimum he was the fifth or sixth, you know, he was going to be a five or six pick. And I think most consensus would have had him higher than that. So it was just the whole idea that it was this huge reach, this huge gamble. What in the world are they doing? It wasn't that far out there.
No, it wasn't that far out there. I think the big thing, and look, man, it's one of those things where it was a bit of a surprise because early in the process, Trayvon Walker's name was not tied. The conversation throughout the fall and throughout the early part of the offseason was Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau. Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau. Then it was the offensive tackles, Aiden Hutchinson and Thibodeau, and then the latecomer to the party was Trayvon Walker. And when Trayvon Walker shows up at the combine and blows up at the combine, then the name really started kind of heating up when you had people kind of tying his name into the mock drafts and the Jaguars and those things. And so it's not really Trayvon Walker's fault. It's not the Jaguars' fault that the outside might not have been privy to what the Jaguars were thinking when it came to how they were ranking their prospects. But I can say, prior to the combine, the night before, and talking to people and then talking to people that were close to the Jaguars, Trayvon Walker's name came up. And they came up. It came up in terms of his athleticism, his explosiveness, and those things. And in fact, I challenged them on how could you say that this guy is the best one in the draft when he doesn't have the production? And they said, you watch the tape, the traits are there. You look at the explosiveness, the way he puts his foot in the ground, changes directions and all those things. He hasn't been asked to be a guy that goes and hunts the quarterback. And so you shouldn't necessarily ding him. And so that came from a roundtable of D-line coaches where I'm like, well, wait a minute. What about Hutchinson? What about this guy? What about that guy? And they all, to a man, pointed out that Trayvon Walker was the guy. And so even though I felt like I was kind of blown away by the information back then, and I was still real slow to warm to it, it wasn't a surprise in NFL circles that this guy was heating up. And so ultimately, he'll get a chance to prove it. And we should have probably more of a positive or neutral to positive outlook than a negative one, because we haven't seen him play and we haven't seen the role that they're going to put him in.
What's his, Bucky, this is not a negative question on Trayvon Walker, but say, for example, he doesn't become a big sack guy. And by big sack guy, I mean, you know, a 12 a year where you're thinking of him as Bosa. I don't know if he's ever going to be that guy. But what's his worst case scenario outside of that? Like, who can he be if he's not that? Because I maintain he can still be worth that pick, even if it's not just monster sack leading the league in sacks every year.
So there are a couple different ways. And he's not the same player, but I would say that from an impact standpoint, if he never develops the pass rush skills, there's no reason to think that he can't have the similar impact to Jadeveon Clowney and what he was able to do with the Houston Texans. If you look at Jadeveon Clowney, maybe this year was the first year that he got over double-digit sacks, and I'm being loose with that, but I know he didn't have double-digit sacks up until this season. He was a guy that was disruptive, though, on the backside of J.J. Watt, just destroying the run. He'd gone to multiple Pro Bowls, being a run destroyer, being able to accumulate a ton of tackles for loss and those things. And so,
and didn't coordinators have to account for him for 5, 6, 7 years when you were there?
You had to pay attention because he was so explosive and disruptive. He would just completely blow up the running game as a bull in a china shop off the edge. Trayvon Walker can maybe be the same. Heavy-handed, coming off the edge, being able to stack, being able to kind of move and maneuver and blow it up. Yes. Now, remember this. This division is one that features big-time bell cow running backs. You have Derrick Henry in Tennessee. You have Jonathan Taylor in Indianapolis. And even though the league is shifting to a pass-centric focus, you still got to be able to stop the run. And so everything that we've heard, even in listening to the coaches at the presses, they talk about, we got to stop the run. We got to be physical. We got to impose our will. Well, Trayvon Walker certainly fits the bill and checks the boxes when you ask the kind of players that you want to assemble on defense. And so we have to kind of keep a broad range view. It's easy to look at stats and sacks and say, hey, this guy's having an impact on the game. But we have to look and kind of feel his presence. If we feel his presence based on the way he's blowing up the run and those things, it's a positive.
Especially in this division. We know how important the run is in the AFC South with those other teams and those running backs.
Yeah, and JP, I know we're moving on, but that's not to say. I talked to multiple people since the draft who say he has the skills to be a pass rusher. I'm not saying that he won't be that guy when I ask that question. It's just he hasn't done it yet, but everybody believes that he has the hands, he has the quickness, he has those tools, just has to develop them.
He's got to go see it, and that's why they're going to focus him on outside linebacker to begin things. The Devin Lloyd pick was, you know, fantastic right when it happened. The big trade to move up, three picks, moved up into the 27th overall selection.
Major surprise.
Make that pick, and here we go. I mean, after reviewing this a few days, my excitement has not waned at all. I think it's grown, in fact, since the draft, Bucky, about what he can bring to a defense, yes, on the field, but in time, once he gets established in the league, what he can bring off the field for this Jaguars defense and this team as a whole. I like this pick a whole lot.
I mean, there's a lot to like about the pick. You know, a couple things, and this includes Trayvon Walker. The Jaguars really made a concerted effort to talk about football character. And I think it's important that we distinguish football character as opposed to moral character. Moral character is like doing right and wrong and all those things that you do in life. Football character is about like your work ethic, your toughness, your commitment level to being a great football player. It's the energy and effort that you bring to the field each and every day and how that energy and effort impacts your teammate. Well, when you're in the bottom of the first round, you're able to get a player who impacts the game, like Devin Lloyd has been able to impact the game for his team at Utah, it speaks volumes. And I think, you know, everyone will talk about Trayvon Walker's inability to get to the quarterback or he hasn't put up big numbers. Well, one thing that they haven't said is Devin Lloyd is a guy that gets to the quarterback. In two seasons, he's had over 6.5+ sacks in each of those years. And he's been able to do it in a variety of ways, whether it's coming off the edge with his hand down, where it's coming from the second level on blitzes. He gets to the quarterback. And the other thing that he does is he is always around the ball. Look at the number of interceptions. Look at the tackles for loss. Just the number of disruptive plays. He's a guy who makes a ton of splash plays. The comparison, and I think is a very good comparison, to Darius Leonard is real. Darius Leonard's impact on the Colts defense has been a game changer. And so if Devin Lloyd can give the Jaguars any of that, man, sign me up, because this is a player that he can be a monster. And just depending on how they're going to blitz and how they're going to deploy him, I think he is going to be a guy that quickly not only becomes like one of the leaders of the defense, but I think he may be the most impactful player on the defense based on the way that he's able to kind of generate those splash plays.
Quickly, John, the stats from last year: 111 tackles, 22 tackles for loss, 7 sacks, 4 interceptions, 6 passes defensed, 2 touchdowns, fumble recovery. I mean, the guy's all over the place.
Yeah, and I said it all weekend. I think this guy is going to immediately be a star in this town. He's got that personality that is easy to embrace. This fan base is going to love him. That's not why you take a guy like that, but I'm just trying to sort of give the context of, I think, what this guy is going to be. If this team gets good around Trevor Lawrence, around what's going on, Devin Lloyd has all the makings of being one of the faces of the franchise for the next however number of years. I wasn't sure about the pick when I first immediately saw it because it was a quick reaction. I had thought they might move up to get receiver there. I kind of wanted to ask Bucky about that. It seemed to me once I looked back at the draft, Buck, that the receivers that you really felt good about to trade up for were already gone at that point. I think they felt differently about receiver than a lot of us did outside anyway. But even if they had sort of had in the back of their mind going and getting a one, it seemed like it was too far to move up to get in that group. But I sort of think that they liked this even over that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I do believe they like this over that. And I believe a couple of things to talk about your receiver question quickly. Guys that come out of this system, Doug Peterson, Andy Reid, Mike Holmgren, having been up in Green Bay, San Francisco, the originators of the system believe that you do not need A-level players on the perimeter for this system to work and work at a high level.
And that's a ideally, major factor there, Bucky, isn't it? That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a major factor. Like, yeah, ideally, yeah, if you can have a Jerry Rice type to be able to do it, great. But if you go back and look at Mike Holmgren and the Packers, and when they went to the Super Bowl, when Doug Peterson and I were there, it was Robert Brooks, it was Antonio Freeman, Andre Rison came later, but there wasn't a cast of stars. Go back and look at the Kansas City Chiefs teams that Doug Peterson was offensive coordinator with when Andy Reid was there. Those wide receivers were just guys. It wasn't like high-level star players. They were effective. They worked within the system, and it was great. Even in looking at how Doug won the Super Bowl with Philadelphia, those receivers were not marquee top five receivers. And so the system creates opportunities, and if the quarterback is efficient and effective, the offense works. And so with that in mind, and I'm sure that had been talked about inside those rooms. Hey, we got Christian Kirk, we have Zay Jones, we have Marvin Jones. That triumphant is good enough for us to get it done. Now let's focus on building up the defense, because the defense has to play at a level to give you an opportunity to win games. And so with Devin Lloyd being able to come in there, having Trayvon Walker, and I'm going to mention Chad Muma along with Devin Lloyd, because I think they come in pairs. Chad Muma, as impressive as Devin Lloyd's stat line is, Chad Muma's stat line is just as impressive. And when you think about the kind of player that I believe he is, he was a top five player that I ranked as an off-the-ball linebacker. He's a player that is very comparable to Logan Wilson, who plays in Cincinnati and was a starter on a team that went to the Super Bowl. I would say that this guy is even better in certain aspects. And so I don't know how they're going to get him on the field, but the combination of Devin Lloyd and Chad Muma, like, if you could have told me that before the draft, I was like, that's a wish list for a defensive coordinator. You got two instinctive, active guys that can do a variety of different things against the run and pass, and they're both high football IQ guys.
Bucky, how will they get those two guys on the field? They can play together. I asked about this after the draft because I think it's a big point. I agree with you. I think with these two guys, they all of a sudden look faster and more athletic defensively to me, and it's been a long time since you could say that. But it feels to me like the versatility of Trayvon Walker and of these two linebackers completely changes the dynamic of this defense, where we could look back on this draft as a key turning point for this defense. But how do they get all those guys on the field to matter at the same time?
Creativity. And so a lot of this will tap into the creativity of the defensive staff. Mike Alway has to look and see all the different tool sets that he has available. And then he has to figure out what combinations can I put on the field. And so we're so conditioned to think about defenses in 4-3 and 3-4 terms, but the game is played 70% in sub packages. So now normally when we think of sub packages, we traditionally think of four down linemen, two linebackers, five DBs. That's your standard four-man nickel package. Well, there's some teams that are being creative where you go 3-3-5, three D linemen, three linebackers, five DBs. Sometimes you may want to go 2-4-5, where you have two D linemen, you have four linebackers that can move around and kind of prowl and do a bunch of different things, and then you have five DBs. And what you want to do is you can run the same, basically what I call blitz patterns with different personnel on the field and give the offense a different look while keeping it fairly simple for your guys. You're just interchanging the pieces that you're using. So I think you have to tap into the creativity. But I would expect to see the three linebackers that have been acquired in the offseason, the marquee free agent signing, and then the two draft picks, they have to be on the field in those critical downs because those guys are impact players.
Yeah, you got them for a reason, JP.
Yeah, got to play at some point. I mean, especially that high up in the draft. This is the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, and John Osier. Check out the rest of our draft coverage on Jaguars.com, including Luke Fortner, Snoop Connor, Gregory Jr., and Montarek Brown, the other Jaguars draft picks, and a listing of all the undrafted players who have been signed by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Some other news this week, Cam Robinson signed his extension, his reaction in a media conference call earlier this week.
It kind of shows me that, you know, everything I've been putting into this is, you know, it's kind of starting to come to fruition and it's kind of starting to pay off. Far from where I want to be, but, you know, it's definitely, I think I can, myself as a player and us as a team, take it even higher and just kind of continue to build on where we're starting this year. So, I mean, I'm just excited. And for my family, it's hard for me to even put it into words. You know, it's a blessing. This is the things you've been working towards since you were, you know what I'm saying, a kid playing in Little League or whenever you start playing the game. So, I mean, it's kind of surreal, but it's definitely an awesome moment for myself and my family.
Cam Robinson, the Jaguars left tackle, another 3 years. Pro Football Talk had the breakdown of the contract, the signing bonus of $15 million. The base salary this year, $2 million, full guaranteed. So that opens up some cap space. There's a per-game roster bonus of $744,000 a game, apparently. Base salary next year of $16 million. Workout bonuses. I mean, all this stuff adds up. And
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it certainly, yes, it does. Certainly has. He had a big smile on his face, Bucky, yeah. That's for sure. So so it's solidified. He's going to be here the next few years, and you can build some things on the offensive line around him, Bucky.
Yeah, you can build things around him. And I think they've done a really good job of building up this offensive line. You look at re-signing Cam, free agency, bringing over Brandon Scherff, the draft, Luke Fortner coming over. They have made it a point to give Trevor Lawrence enough protection for him to do what he wants to do in the pocket and to also be able to run the football. Cam Robinson was critical because he's played in a level that you don't want to let that kind of production and talent walk out of the door. Now, I would say the challenge is, can he take it up a notch and play at an all-star level? It's one thing to play as a high-end starter, play on a franchise tag, and earn your money. It's another thing to take your game up to where you perform at an all-star level. For the Jaguars to be the team that they want to be down the line, he has to play at an all-star level.
Something I probably overlooked, JP, and I'm not sure we talked about it a whole lot this weekend, but after you sort of let the draft resonate a little bit. You look back in the entire off season, and I thought they might go offense a little bit more in the draft. But then when you look at the draft and free agency, you signed two wide receivers. You signed Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. You signed Evan Engram. You signed Brandon Scherff. So, Sheriff, I apologize. Well, everybody, all the questions I get are, why didn't they help Trevor? Why didn't they help Trevor? To me, it's pretty clear now in retrospect, you helped Trevor with veteran guys. You put veteran guys around the young quarterback. That's a little different than a lot of teams build. Some teams believe you build your offense with youth and let it come together.
Collectively grow as one.
Yeah, but
right?
We've sort of seen that approach around here. We're trying to get young guys to collectively grow. Without that experience, it sometimes doesn't work. It didn't work for the offense when they tried to do it 13, 14-ish, mm-hmm. You know, with three wide receivers and young Blake, and they never quite came together. When I say an experience was why, maybe it was talent, whatever. But the point being, they've clearly taken the approach of putting veteran guys around the young quarterback. That was their approach to help him, as opposed to, a young left tackle and a young one wide receiver. Everybody trying to develop at once. You got a bunch of kids, raw kids, making mistakes. And then they built on defense. I've got to think that now, going forward, they hope to be building this thing together for a long time. As time moves on and Trevor gets to year three, then I think you'll start seeing them bring young players in around him. Once he gets the ability to carry young guys, maybe that's how they'll approach it. But I think there's something to that, Bucky. I think they wanted to bring in veterans to help the young guy as opposed to rookies to be around the young guy.
AP, the writer is pretty smart over there. The writer is pretty smart. So I'm going to give the writer some credit because
– just ask him.
Because the observation is a good one. And I will expand upon the observation and say this. The younger the quarterback, the more experience you need around the quarterback for him to develop. Trevor Lawrence is on a path when you take a quarterback like that. What you hope is they start their NFL career as a game manager and they evolve into being the playmaker. And so as he's going through that evolution of being a game manager, the early part of the game management people where he's learning the game, how to manage the game and do those things, you want experience around him because the most important thing you want to give him is stability. And that stability comes in the form of reliability, dependability, so he can develop trust. Okay, this receiver is going to run the route at 12 yards. I'm going to drop back and I'm going to throw it to this spot. And this receiver is going to do that because I can trust that as a veteran, he's going to do exactly what's been talked about in the huddle in meeting rooms. As Trevor evolves to year 3, 4, 5, and as the money changes based on how he performs, as he becomes a $40 million quarterback and you're entrusting more to him to be the driving force of the offense, then you bring young guys in because they're younger, they're cheaper, but then it's on him to help those guys develop by putting the ball consistently in the strike zone, tutoring them, telling them this is how I want those routes to be run, et cetera, et cetera. So John is absolutely right in terms of the process and how it should go. And that's what you're seeing. Doug Peterson, remember, we have more quarterback gurus around now that not only coach it, but have played it and played it between the lines at the NFL level. They understand the challenges that are associated with that when you don't have trustworthy guys on the perimeter and in front. Because it makes life harder for the quarterback to now have to manage everything when he can't just go through and play free and loose.
There is no shortage of quarterback guru in the building, JP.
You got that right. Right. Say that again.
They have cornered the market.
They have. The Jaguars are future-focused and ready for a new look in 2022. Join us at the bank this season as head coach Doug Peterson and quarterback Trevor Lawrence lead the charge. Lock in your seats at jaguars.com/tickets. Or call 904-633-2000. London calling after this. Welcome back to the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, Bucky Brooks, John Osier. The Dailies play schedule red hot this week. John will be at probably all of these. Thursday, May 5th, Tim McGraw. Friday, May 6th, Erica Badu and friends. Saturday, May 7th, The Offspring. Sunday, May 8th, The Time. Tickets and information at dailiesplace.com.
The Time.
Heim.
Oh, Heim. Okay. thought you said time. Like, I remember Morris Day back in the day. I thought that we're bringing in Purple Rain.
Yeah.
So. I don't think so.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I go see that.
Yeah, you definitely. Yeah.
You're going to be at the Offspring, John,
you
Saturday?
Know, I was intrigued by it, and I, you know, they were a little past my era. I liked some of their songs. I can't see going to the whole show, but I like the Offspring. But I don't know if that's my scene.
Fair. Okay. So, well, there you go. There's more concerts to come this summer and spring.
I'm looking forward to Big Time Rush later in June.
Big Time Rush. Okay.
I think we all are. All right. The Jaguars have added a player from the international pipeline. Ayo Oyelolo is joining the Jaguars via the International Player Pathway Program. He was introduced to football at the University of Nottingham in the UK, graduated in 2020 with a law degree. He's 23 years old, was in the player pathway training phase but not allocated in 2021. He was in the CFL last year on a practice squad. Bucky, you know a little more about this program, I think, than a lot of folks might, honestly. I honestly didn't really realize this was a thing. The Jaguars have this guy here in the offseason. He has the chance now to be on the practice squad as an extra practice squad member in the regular season.
Yeah, like teams jump on this because it gives you the opportunity to have an extra player on your roster, and it doesn't really cost you anything. And so now you get an extra body. It allows you to kind of free up some things when it comes to your veteran players. Maybe you don't have to tax them as much on scout team while maybe developing an international player. This international pathway program is part of a big initiative for the league to grow the game globally. And so in the UK, there is an international academy where guys from foreign countries come together and they work with NFL caliber coaches to develop their skills to become ready to make the entrance into the league through this program. Some of these guys have been up. They've been tested, like combine tested and all this other stuff, so they could be potential draft picks, or they come into the league like this. We've seen other guys. There's a rugby player, Christian Wade, who went up to Buffalo a season ago, had an opportunity. All these guys are kind of the international players that we're seeing. We've seen a handful of success stories with this program. So it's really, really big. And as the league continues to grow and expand globally, we're going to see more guys get opportunities. And this international pathway program is an entrance way into the National Football League.
And Bucky, you said off the air, it's really become big, or there is a movement for the Nigerian players, correct?
Yeah, so NFL Africa just announced that they're going to do some things there, like maybe put an academy and really mine the talent. OCU Manura is a big part of that program. But if you just look at the draft and look at some of the guys that have come through the last few years, you've seen a pipeline of Nigerian descendant players kind of make their way, much like Yannick Ngakoue has success in the league. There are a ton of Nigerians that are beginning to impact the league. And so the league has expanded, and they're looking to see if they're more, if they can make opportunity, create more opportunities for those guys to make it to the league. And so it's really been a great thing. As the game is growing and growing globally, we're seeing more guys have access to the game, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's something the league's had to do, because it's such a different sport to try to grow internationally than baseball or basketball, because of all the, you know, where do you find
tough,
competition
tough to play, yeah,
for players? It's a hard thing to play. It's not going to happen just organically without help from up top. So, you know, credit to the league, and it's starting to move quickly.
So congratulations to defensive back Ayo Oyelolo. He will join the Jaguars actually for rookie minicamp next weekend. He'll be on the field with the rookies. Get to see him run around a little bit. By the way, the league had their international games announcement earlier on Wednesday, including the Jaguars hosting the Denver Broncos. That's at 9:30 Eastern time, October 30th. That's officially 1:30 London time. The time falls back in London on that day, the final Sunday of October each year. So, former Jaguars offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, now the head coach of the Broncos, Russell Wilson coming to Wembley to face the Jags. And it's out there. It's announced now. So, looking forward to being back at Wembley, John.
Yeah, and maybe I will be. I realized this morning when I was thinking about this game, I think it's been since 2019 that I've been to Wembley.
Yeah, so that was
20, we didn't do it because of COVID.
It was the Texans game, and the Jaguars turned the ball over on the final four possessions of the game, trying to fight back against the Texans.
Yeah, that was one of many pleasant memories from that year. But But it'll be good to be back there. I mean, I didn't go this last year. Did you go this year?
No. None of us went this year.
Back in London, I'm assuming I'll be back. So I'm looking forward to it.
What do you think, Bucky? The Broncos, Jaguars, the Adam Gotsis revenge game again? I mean, he was a Bronco before he was the Jaguar. He re-signed with the Jags, by the way.
Yeah, this is interesting. It'll be interesting because you get an opportunity to go against Russell Wilson, see all that other stuff, see this high-powered team that people are celebrating. Some have touted as a team that might be worthy of Super Bowl consideration. So it'd be a great test. It'd be another measuring stick game. It'd be a chance to kind of see it across the pond, see what it looks like.
It's the Nate Hackett Bowl, too.
It is the Nate Hackett game. And big one.
Fighting Nate Hackett.
I'm excited for Nate.
I am, too. I love him. Great guy.
Yeah, I mean, did Nate always have music around? Because I saw that he says he can't run a practice without music being around. He has to have the energy and the buzz.
There was music. There was music.
There was music. You couldn't hear yourself think on the practice field here. So, yes, there was music.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. He's staying true to form.
The other international games, two more games in London earlier than the Jaguars, October 2nd, the Vikings and the Saints at Spurs, and the Giants and the Packers also at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. That's on October 9th. And then a game in Munich at Allianz Arena, home of FC Bayern Munich. It's November 13th, and it's the Seahawks and the Buccaneers. And then in Mexico City, November 21st, on Monday Night Football at Estadio Azteca, it's the 49ers and the Cardinals. So five international games this year, and of course the Jaguars are back at Wembley Stadium.
The later the better in the season, London, for me, JP. That's just always been my thing.
Really?
Yeah. There was one year they had it like 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. For some reason I loved that. I don't know why.
Now, we'll see when the bye week is. A lot of times it's right after the London game. The official schedule comes out May 12th. So
yeah,
we'll
I don't
have
know that
idea.
That's a lock this year. Some years I've heard it's a lock. I don't know that that's a guarantee.
And the one year that the Jaguars played after it, they played in New York the next week against the Jets and lost in overtime to the Jets.
But that was the year they made the AFC Championship game. So maybe
yes,
they'll get
it
back
was.
To that. So
yes, it was.
That was probably why.
That's yeah, might have been.
They didn't have the bye week after
one. Might have been. Coming up, Jaguars Happy Hour Thursday. Ashlyn Sullivan in this week for the show tomorrow night. Bucky, what you got coming up now? Draft's over. What happens now?
Well, finishing up the last few shows of Path to the Draft, and so got to stay on point. Just finish strong. Got to make sure we finish past the finish line the right way. And then after that, guys, it's minicamp season. Time to go to minicamp. Time to go make some appearances at some minicamp. See what's going on. See how the young guys are progressing, and then you get the OTAs and all that other stuff, and then we got the official veterans minicamp at the end.
Now this, Bucky, is John Osher's favorite part of the NFL offseason, the month ahead of it.
Yeah, there's nothing I love more than a good OTA practice, Buck. I mean,
I love it.
Really
I love
me.
It, John. You know,
it's
don't
so
be surprised. I might just
Bucky.
I might just pop up out the ground just so I can see what it all looks like.
I would
like.
Love to see you. We would talk, but come on.
Come yeah, on. Hey, he's big.
I get that you got to do it, but on the field, it's a classroom time of year. You're not.
Oh, no. John, you become an A-level writer by not writing. You
all
become
right.
a better writer by writing every day. It's the same thing in football. The only
point.
Way you get good at football is doing football.
You're not wrong.
You got to put your feet in the grass.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Come on.
Okay.
The grass is your.
Okay.
The grass is your. Come on. The grass is your classroom. We got to get them out there.
Yep.
Get them going.
Okay. I'll look for. Maybe you can teach me something I don't know. It's always possible. Or
come on.
It's actually very possible.
Come on. Like, we get out there. Bring your cleats. Bring your cleats. We'll go to OTA practice with our cleats on, ready to go.
You imagine John Osher wearing cleats?
Wearing
no.
Cleats.
Like Robert Sala used to do. That's what we'd do. Ready to go. Never know.
There would be a slip and fall accident in the hallway.
The workers come.
That's right.
The
workers
come. On that note, let's call it a podcast today. Listen to all our pods on the podcast page on Jaguars.com or the official Jaguars Podcast Network on iHeartRadio, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. Leave us a comment and a 5-star rating. For Bucky Brooks, John Osher, and Joe Fortunato, I'm JP Shadrick. We'll catch you next time on the Huddle Up Podcast.